I'm Indy Todd. Welcome to The Point. Today, some thoughts for your summer reading list. Jill Erickson, reference librarian at Falmouth Public Library, and Jennifer Gaines, librarian at the Woods Hole Library, are here to offer some suggestions. Good morning, ladies.
Good morning, Mindy.
Of course, we're kind of jealous because we don't have time for summer reading.
Right. This is true. And before we went on air, we were talking a little bit about that and how we have very mixed feelings as people who don't often get a summer vacation in the summer. We may have in the fall, in the spring, because we live in a town that is very, very busy in the summer. And as a result, we are working most of the summer.
And we feel free to say this because we're sure there are other people out there working, too. Although sometimes we take the burdens upon ourselves and become curmudgeons in our own little hole.
So what we do is we're going to have this list. So if you are like us and don't have a lot of time for reading in the summer, you can take a note. And in the fall,
that's right.
Well, you should do a fall reading list instead of a summer reading list. All right. So for those who do have some time, Jill, what's your first selection?
Well, the first selection that I've brought is not everybody's idea of summer reading or a beach read, but I will explain why. This is one of the things many people do, as we certainly are aware of in this town, is people travel at this time of year. And we have recently, I've been asked a number of times about, do you have any great books on the national parks? Because apparently a lot of people are traveling to national parks this year. And so I discovered this book, which is, may I say, very heavy and very large. I really can't even open it in the studio because there's
not enough room. Yeah.
I will hit the microphone if I open it. However, it is called Art of the National Parks, Historic Connections, Contemporary Interpretations. And it is a spectacularly beautiful book. You don't even have to check it out. You could just come to the library and look at it, so you don't have to carry it home. It is very heavy. But what it is the history of various parks followed by groups of paintings by various artists who paint it within these national parks. So there are 69 painters and sculptors at 8 national parks who are represented here. One of these national parks is, in fact, Acadia National Park in Maine. And they give, just to tell you, give you an idea of what they're doing in this book, is they start with sort of the history of the park. So we learn that Acadia National Park was established in 1919. And that American landscape architect Charles Elliott is credited with the idea of preserving Mount Desert Island as a national park. In 1890, Elliott published an article entitled Waverly Oaks, defending a stand of virgin oak trees that were in Belmont, Massachusetts. He made a plea for preservation of the oaks and compared his strategy for the conservation of natural beauty to the preservation of books held by the Boston Public Library or works of art treasured by the Museum of Fine Arts. That article led to the Massachusetts legislature's creation of the Trustees of Reservations in 1891. So you get some very interesting history in this book, but you also, again, get these spectacular paintings and sculptures. And one of the artists that apparently spends a lot of time at Acadia National Park actually lives on Cape Cod. His name is Joseph McGurl, and he writes, "Everyone and everything experiences reality in a different way. A bat sees the world through radar. A camera sees the world through a mechanical lens. Human beings see through a veil of personal experiences. I represent the world as I know it." So some very thoughtful comments from the artists about their artwork and how much time they spend in the parks. And so a very beautiful book. It also has history, but a little heavy to carry
I will warn you, a little heavy. Have to go to the gym,
right?
You can carry that around.
That's exactly right.
Lift it up and
down. And it is called The Art of the National Parks.
It is a beautiful book.
Yes, I want that book.
Yeah, Jennifer, what's your first
book? Well, I was going to take a step backwards since we just started, and that I was asking people what summer reading meant to them. And one was a woman who had just walked out of the book sale at the library with a stack of paperbacks. And she said, "I love to read at the beach." And I was so glad she was taking paperbacks because for years I've been in charge of repairing books at the library. When books from the library go out to beaches, they come back, the hardbacks, come back with sand inside the plastic covers, which I then have to take out And it's very difficult.
Well, and you know, this may indeed be another reason librarians are not so excited about beach reads. In fact, we had the same problem at the Falmouth Public Library and ended up creating this thing called the Beach Basket, books that love the beach, and they're just free paperbacks that people can take and never have to bring back, so we don't have the sand in the covers problem.
Yes, lovely. Yeah. Lovely. I talked to other people who said, I just love summer reading. It gives me such an opportunity to dive into all the books I've wanted to read. And when I'm traveling, I like to read books about that place. So I go and I buy books there. I thought, oh, Cape Cod should be a rich place to find books to read about. We have, of course, Thoreau, which Jill will talk about more in a bit. And we have our own present-day naturalist, Robert Finch, who Jill will talk about more in a bit. And he's on the program a lot, or on the station a lot. Which is wonderful. And, of course, there are a whole bunch of people on the Cape and Islands who write specifically for summer reading. So they probably love summer reading.
Right. Okay. So tell us your first book, Jennifer.
Oh, my first book. My first book has nothing to do with any of those things because it's an author that my daughter gave to me from Wisconsin. And I just adore him. His name is Michael Perry. And he's written several books. And they're about life in general. One is a lot about life as a firefighter. Mm. And I shared this with a firefighter friend of mine, and he was really struck by how close to the truth this man is. Another is about raising a family and a farm and trying to get one good egg. Mm-hmm. That one's called Coop, A Family, A Farm, and the Pursuit of One Good Egg. And he just talks about life and about raising his child, and it's just magnificent, the way he jumps from hardscrabble farming to firefighting to rusty old things out in the farm to awe at his daughter's growing up. It's just so impressive.
What was the first book called?
The first one is called Population 485, subtitled Meeting Your Neighbors One Siren at a Time.
Mm. Small town.
Yeah. They're quite marvelous.
And if you have a book that you'd like to share with us that we should be putting on our summer reading list, 866-999-4626. That's 866-999-4626. Or you can send us via email, thepoint@capeandislands.org.
And I should mention that we, of course, love books and love reading and are always happy that our libraries are full of people, especially in the summer, because people tend to be very happy to be here, and we're happy to have them. So Jennifer did mention that I brought with me the new Robert Finch book called The Outer Beach, A Thousand-Mile Walk on Cape Cod's Atlantic Shore. And it is got some beautiful pieces in it. It is a collection of his writings. And interestingly enough, there was an entire beautifully written, beautiful review about this book in the Wall Street Journal, of all places, which was just, I'm just going to read you a little bit of the review, because clearly Sam Sachs, who wrote this review, must either know Robert Finch or has just spent so much time on the Cape, he understands what Robert Finch is trying to do in this book. And he writes, "The Cape Cod, known to most visitors, is a tranquil, easygoing place, a haven for beachcombing and nature walks, sunfish sailing and surf casting, fried clams, used bookstores, and summer league baseball, where the only real dangers are ticks and bridge traffic." But there is another Cape Cod, one described by Henry Beston in The Outermost House, his classic 1928 account of a year spent in a two-room cottage on the dunes in Eastham. Beston saw something more elemental, a narrow peninsula of sand engaged in a mighty war with the forces of the ocean. Age by age, he wrote, the sea here gives battle to the land. Age by age, the earth struggles for her own, calling to her defense, her energies and her creations, bidding her plants steal down upon the beach and holding the frontier sands in a net of grass and roots which the storms wash free. The great rhythms of nature, today so dully disregarded, wounded even, have here their spacious and primeval liberty. In his lovely and fortifying book, The Outer Beach, Robert Finch records his observations from the site of the battle.
Goodness,
great writing in the review, great essays. There is a great piece in called Family Fun, which talks just about having his grandchildren on the beach. And he writes, the trajectory of the day, which had started on a low note, ended on a high one. As we sat there feeding the fire, watching the liquid flames, listening to the beat of the rising breakers and telling stories, one of our group reflected on the magic of a beach party. You don't need much. A fire, a few hot dogs, some beer and soda, and people who like one another. The rest pretty much takes care of itself. So really, just a gorgeous collection of essays by Robert Finch. And I should mention that, in fact, Robert Finch will be, not, I'm sure, many places this summer,
all over,
including
the
Falmouth Public Library. He will be there July 17th at 3:30. And I hope everybody is not on the beach at that time. But the Outer Beach, a 1,000-mile walk on Cape Cod's Atlantic shore, well worth some time in your hammock.
All right. So Dan really, really wants us to mention Sue Grafton's new book. He mentioned it to us before we went on the air. Now I've gotten handed this note here. Dan's pick, the new Sue Grafton alphabet mystery, Y is for Yesterday, scheduled to be released August 22nd. And evidently, Dan is not the only fan of Sue Grafton, because he says the Falmouth Library website says already 135 holds. So there you go. Dan's happy.
Well, right, until Jen. He's 136, he's happy.
He's got a little bit of a weight.
Another person who I talked to about summer reading said, I like summer reading because it gives me time to take on a challenge. One year, I read the whole Forsyte saga. I thought, goodness, this is rather magnificent that someone can set aside their time and set their goals and read. Again, fiction. Mm-hmm. That's okay. Worthy. Very worthy. So I was at one point thinking, well, high school kids would have a different sort of look at summer reading, because they have their required summer reading.
Required, that's right, yeah.
But then there'll be certain adults who say, I want to see the high school reading list because I want to read those books.
You know, we see that as well. That because there are a lot of classics, in fact, on those the high school reading list.
Yeah. Mm. So there are worthy, I don't know, I feel very judgmental here saying worthy summer reading list as opposed to just plain fun.
Right.
Well, there is room for all of it.
A little bit of everything, right? Yes. Right. So what's your next book?
I'm in my worthy section here. This is by a fellow who I've become quite enamored of. It's James Prosek. And he came to town a couple of years ago, and we did an exhibit at the Woods Hole Museum of his paintings of fish. This one is about eels. And I realized I should bring it up because I was talking with a woman in town who didn't know that eels lay their eggs in the Sargassum. Well, and in the Sargasso Sea, and that they swirl around in the sea for, is it a year or two, and they go back to their parents' homeland. And James went all around the world, both Atlantic and Pacific, in tracking the eels. And there's a similar sort of phenomenon in the Pacific, which I didn't know about. And I do now because I've read his book. But I like all of James's books, but this one is perhaps one of the more informative ones.
Eels. All right. 866-999-4626. What book or books do you think we should add to our reading list for the summer? 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. We'll talk more after a break. Listening to The Point, we are talking about summer reading with Jill Erickson, reference librarian at Falmouth Public Library, and Jennifer Gaines, librarian at the Woods Hole Library. If you have a suggestion for us, 866-999-4626. That's 866-999-4626. Or you can send us an email, thepoint@capeandislands.org. And again, you don't have to keep jotting down the names of the books, because we will have a link to the list that we talk about today a little bit later on our website, capeandislands.org. Sarah is giving us a call from Wellfleet. Hi, Sarah.
Hi. I'm so happy that you're taking my call. I finished a book last night that is definitely on my favorite books of all time list, and I'm so happy to talk about it.
Oh, good. What's the book?
The author's name is Angie Thomas, and the title of the book is The Hate You Give. It's a young adult, I think. It was in the young adult section of the Wellfleet Public Library. And it is an inside look at kind of the problem of police brutality, and really, I think, has been coined the Black Lives Matter movement novel. Mm-hmm. It is heartwarming, heartbreaking. It is so lovely. I had to limit myself the number of pages that I read every night because I was staying up too late. It is a really, really beautiful, important read.
All right. And so this was a page turner for you. How'd you? You said you limited yourself on how much you could read. So how do you do that? Once I get stuck in a book, I don't know how to limit myself.
Well, I have twin 4-year olds at home, and my sleep number of hours that I sleep is precious. I had to balance this really compelling, suspenseful, beautiful book with being sure that I get enough sleep. So I had to limit myself.
Right.
One chapter a night, but often I would slip into 2 and 3 chapters. I couldn't help myself. It's such a good book.
All right, Sarah, thanks for that. We'll add that to our list. Sarah, her book is The Hate You Give by Angie Thomas. Thanks so much for calling. 866-999-4626 is our number. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. Jill, what's your next book?
The book that I am currently reading and wish that I could take the week off to finish is called The Essex Serpent by Sarah Perry. And as the review of the New York Times says, Sarah Perry's The Essex Serpent is a novel of almost insolent ambition, lush and fantastical, a wild Eden behind a garden gate set in the Victoria era. It's part ghost story and part natural history lesson, part romance and part feminist parable. It's wonderfully dense and serenely self-assured. I found it so transporting that 48 hours after completing it, I was still resentful to be back home. And that's how I feel as well. I just really would like to stop everything and be able to finish this. It has just won some prize in England, apparently. And it is the thing I love about this is not only is it a beautiful story and an interesting story, which is about the unlikely friendship between this widow and a scholarly vicar. And that sort of sets the stage for the whole novel with competing belief systems. So, and there is also this thing called the Essex Serpent, which has the woman at the beginning of the novel has her husband has died. Her very not nice husband mm-hmm. has died. And she then ends up in Essex and runs into this minister who is married with his own family. She has a family. She has one son who is, it indicates more or less that he is autistic. One isn't quite sure what's wrong with him, but he is a very unique child. And this is a little bit of the writing from this, because I think one of the things, you know, you can have a great story. There are these various things that make up a great novel, and you can have great characters, and you can have a great plot, and you can have a great setting, and you still don't have necessarily great writing. This is also great writing, and I think that's what so charms me by it and makes me want to keep reading. Plus, it's just a plot that keeps moving along. So here is a little bit about our heroine. It struck her that everything under that white sky was made of the same substance, not quite animal, but not merely earth. Where branches had sheared from their trunks, they left bright wounds, and she would not have been surprised to see severed stumps of oak and elm pulse as she passed. Laughing, she imagined herself part of it, and leaning against a trunk in earshot of a chattering thrush, held up her arm and wondered if she might see vivid green lichen stippling the skin between her fingers. Had it always been here, this marvelous black earth in which she sank to her ankles, this coral-colored fungus frilling the branches at her feet? Had birds always sung? Had the rain always this light touch as if she might inhabit it? She supposed they had, and that it had never been very far from her door. She supposed there must have been other times when she'd laughed alone into the wet bark of a tree or exclaimed to no one over the fineness of a fern unfolding, but she could not remember them.
Mm-hmm.
And there end up being not one, but at least two triangles within this novel. So there's much canoodling of one kind and another, but everybody is very Victorian, so nobody does too much. And it is beautifully written, and I can't wait to get back and finish this. It's
book,
called
right.
The Essex Serpent by Sarah Perry, as it says. And Sarah Waters, if you love Sarah Waters novels, you will also love this. She has the quote on the front, which says, "A work of great intelligence and charm by a hugely talented author." I had not heard of Sarah Perry. I now want to go read her novel before this.
All right, Jenny writes, anyone else into the Norwegian author Carl Ove Nosgrod? Did I say that right? I'm partway into book two of his five-book series My Struggle and loving it. Our Woods Hole librarians hinted that I was in the minority with this attraction. So anybody else, did I say his name right? Carl O. Nosgrod?
No, yeah, it's K-N-A-U-S.
Yeah, G-A-A-R-D. All right, so anybody else like Jenny into this author? Let's
I know there are many people who are.
Oh, okay. All right, so well, there's your answer, Jenny. Jerry's calling from Dartmouth. Hi, Jerry.
Hi.
I have a
book that I might throw into the mix, I hope.
You bet.
And it's getting a very good reaction, and it reads like a novel, but it's actually a true autobiographical story, and it's called Ruthless River by Holly Fitzgerald, who is resident of Dartmouth.
Oh, yes.
Really extremely, almost poetically well-written, and it's very, it's a nail-biter, a page-turner, and... It's just very well done. I'm very prejudiced, by the way, because I'm connected to the author. But it's just a fabulous book. It's been getting an incredibly good reaction.
Yes.
What I find most interesting is that people either sit down and read it almost without interruption to the end, or they say that they're reading it, that they're treating it as if... A chocolate pudding with a demi-tasse spoon, taking small little bites and then saving it and coming back to it.
Yeah.
I think that's thrilling, but I'm in love with the author, so it makes
sense. Yes, I was going to say, Jerry, a.k.a. Fitz, correct?
Right.
Yes, that's right. That's right. It's what a way to spend a honeymoon is all I can say.
Now I've actually gotten into the habit of listening to WCAI there, and on the computer comes in beautifully.
Yeah, great.
I thought, well, they're talking about summer reading.
It's a
early job. I'm going to throw that one in.
You bet. And it's a good one to throw in there, Jerry. Thanks for calling and suggesting that. That boy, oh my goodness, let me tell you, that is a survival story like when you have not read before. And the fact that they're like 26 days lost in this river, and it's amazing they survive it. But
survive. It's been getting great press.
Yes. And it is a wonderful story. And
say the title again.
It's called Ruthless River. Love and Survival by Raft. Yeah, it's Ruthless River. And then the Amazon. So. Jill, I think, are you next?
Sure.
Oh.
Apparently, I am. Sure.
You can
have
continue here. Bigger pile of books. Go ahead.
I have a big pile of books here. I will move along to the throw books that I brought. Jennifer did mention that I had brought some throw books with me. And what's interesting is that, in fact, it is the 200th anniversary of his birthday. And thus, the bicentennial statewide read was discovered. This is a year-long event celebrating the 200th anniversary of Henry David Thoreau's birth. And their goal, and listen carefully, their goal is for every town or city in Massachusetts to participate by coordinating a read of some piece of Thoreau's writing in their community at any point in 2017. Now, we have just recently did a walk around Long Pond with the 300 Committee with some Thoreau readings after that. And on August 2nd, we will be celebrating some more with Jeff Wisner at our library, who has edited two books by Thoreau, about Thoreau. One is Thoreau's Wildflowers. The drawings are by Barry Moser, who is a wonderful artist. And what he has done is taken all of the journals, gone through them all, and put them together in chronological order with little entries about, in the Wildflower book, every mention of wildflowers, and in the Animal book, every mention of animals. animals. And so, for example, July 2nd, 1852, there is a whole section on lilies. Last night, as I lay awake, I dreamed of the muddy and weedy river on which I had been paddling, and I seemed to derive some vigor from my day's experience, like the lilies, which have their roots at the bottom. I have plucked a white lily bud just ready to expand, and after keeping it in water for 2 days, have turned back its petals with my hand and touched the lapped points of the petals when they sprang open and rapidly expanded in my hand into a perfect blossom, with the petals as perfectly disposed or at equal intervals as on their native lakes, and in this case, of course, untouched by an insect. So you get Beaufreau's commentary on all of these plants, and as Mindy was saying before we went on air, how many still exist, yeah. Which is an interesting idea. There is a Cape Cod tortoise mentioned in the animals books, and one that he found on Cape Cod in July. But most of this is centered in his home of Concord, and their goal, again, is to get everybody, the goal of this group is to get everybody to read a little bit of an excerpt from Walden. Here's one little bit from Walden. The mass of men lead lives of quiet desperation. What is called resignation is confirmed desperation. From the desperate city, you go into the desperate country and have to console yourself with the bravery of minks and muskrats. A stereotyped but unconscious despair is concealed even under what are called the games and amusements of mankind. There is no play in them, for this comes after work, but it is a characteristic of wisdom not to do desperate things. So that's one of the little pieces they want everyone to hear, but the books, both Thoreau's Animals and Thoreau's Wildflowers, edited by Jeff Wisner, gorgeous books and great books to dip in and out. Thus, great summer reads if you are busy.
I love the illustrations of Barry Moser anyway, and these seem to be all pencil sketches. They're just exquisite.
Yes, oh, yes, yes.
I'm so glad you've brought them. So I can see them. The listeners can't see them, but they're
beautiful.
Take
our word for it.
Yes, they're great.
All right, I'm not sure. Is it Dr. Corey from Dennis? Good morning.
Good morning. And my name is Dr. Finbar Kaur.
Okay.
And I was just driving back to my home here in East Dennis when I heard you on radio and saying that if you wanted to have your book reviewed, call the number, but do tell us life driving my car.
No, we were asking for book recommendations. If there's a favorite book that you'd like to mention for our book summer book reading list, a summer book.
Yeah. This is according to my fellow writers, I belong to the Rising Tide Writers, and we meet in Harwich every week. Mm-hmm. And according to my eighth book is the best book of all my books.
Okay, what's it called?
Pardon me?
What's the name of the book?
The title is Bless Me, Mother.
Bless Me, Mother. Okay.
How Church Leaders Fail Women.
Okay. We'll add that to the list. Thank you so much for recommending that, Dr. Kaur. We appreciate that.
It reminds me.
Go ahead, yeah.
Of a local author in Falmouth who's part of a writing group, and she's published her first book, and she's also involved in the Falmouth genealogy group. So guess what she's written? Historical fiction set in Falmouth up in Hatchville, and it's called The House on Crooked Pond. And it's quite entertaining. She goes through the decades and brings the train to town, and it's just fascinating. I quite liked it. Yeah. And her name is M.L. Schaefer. House on Crooked
Pond.
And
we should say that Dr. Kaur's book is Bless Me, Mother, How Church Leaders Fail Women. All right. And what's your next book, Jennifer?
When Jill was talking about Thoreau, it reminded me of one that I just adored all during my 20s and 30s and sort of forgot on my 40s, but it showed up at the book sale, so I was reminded. It was the Elliot Porter photographs illustrating Thoreau's words, which you could dip in and out, and it was called In Wildness is the Preservation of the World, which seems to be a very important message now also. And I hope the 300 Committee brought that out.
So now from there, we're going. This is another book that is if you like scary and sort of unsettling but true stories, there
scary,
are not
unsettling
one
unsettling and true.
I don't think so, Jill.
Well, you know, these are the stories that you read to get shivers, right? These
okay.
are the things
I like them to not be true.
And this is the opening to one of these stories. These are both have to do with Lizzie Borden.
Oh, okay.
Thus,
okay.
you know, this shivering needed in order to read these. But this is such a great opening. Angela Carter read this spectacular short story in her collection of short stories called Saint and Strangers on Lizzie Borden. And it's got a great opening. Here's just a little bit of it. Early in the morning of the 4th of August, 1892, in the city of Fall River, Massachusetts, hot, hot, hot. Even though it is early in the morning, well before the factory whistle issues its peremptory summons from the dark, satanic mills to which the city owes its present preeminence in the cotton trade, the white, furious sun already shimmers and quivers high in the still air. Nobody could call the New England summer a lovable thing. The inhabitants of New England have never made friends with it. More than the heat, it is the humidity that makes it scarcely tolerable. The weather clings like a low fever you cannot shake off. The Indians who first lived here had the sense to take off their buckskins as soon as things hotted up and sit thereafter up to their necks in ponds. This behavior is no longer permissible in the city of spindles. However, as in most latitudes with similar summers, everything slows down in these dog days. The blinds are drawn, the shutters closed. All indoors becomes drowsy penumbra in which to nap away the worst heat of the day. And when they venture out again in the refreshed evening, they put on thin clothes loose enough to let cool air circulate refreshingly between the muslin and the skin, so that warm weather, as nature intended, is a sweet, sensual, horizontal thing. And she does, of course, get to Lizzie Borden, and in which she says, on this burning morning when, after breakfast and the performance of a few household duties, Lizzie Borden will murder her parents. She will, on rising, don a simple cotton frock that, if worn by itself, might be right for the weather.
Might
in any
just
case,
say Lizzie was acquitted, right?
This is absolutely true. And what is interesting is she... Even though she was acquitted, this case goes on and on and on. And the town embraces it. Her house is now a B&B. And apparently the author of this other book on Lizzie Borden, and now there's a whole novel out called See What I Have Done by Sarah Schmidt. This is just coming out in America. She is Australian. It had already come out in Australia. But she takes the four voices. She takes four voices from the house and sort of follows. Each chapter is a different voice. One is Lizzie's. One is her sister's. One is the maid's. And one is this guy who was sort of shady and doing deals with her uncle and who may or may not have been involved with the whole thing. But she gives each one of them very distinctive voices. And it is a very interesting take. And one of the things not having read a lot about Lizzie Borden other than the Angela Carter story, talks about her going to Europe. And she writes in one of her sections, it was only 2 years ago that I was on my grand European tour, the freedom I had. Emma wasn't there to tell me how to behave or what to say, and so I got myself a life. On father's insistence, I went with cousins, Bordens of blood and of marriage, who I barely spoke to back at home, and we set sail, gulped ocean winds, learned how to stand against waves, the things we did. Mm-hmm. So then, of course, she has to come back to America and back to a stepmother who apparently she did not care for at all. But this is a really gripping read and well worth your summer read time. It's called See What I Have Done by Sarah Schmidt, if you want to think a little bit more about Lizzie Borden.
And I suppose it would cool you off because it would send shivers down
That's
your back.
Exactly right.
Yes. Well, I think it's fascinating that we're still so fascinated with Lizzie Borden all these, you know, many, many years later.
And
right?
that this woman in Australia decides to write a novel about her, I think, is also extraordinary.
Yeah. She was acquitted in 1892, in case you're wondering when that was. All right.
I was very interested to hear the Transom.org presentation of a woman who went to Fall River and heard that the Chamber of Commerce is embracing Lizzie Borden, and she's becoming quite the gal. And
yeah.
Who
we'll
knew?
Be hearing a lot more about that next month in August.
Good.
866-999-4626 is our number. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. We'll have more after a break. You're listening to The Point. We are talking about books for summer reading with Jill Erickson, reference librarian at Falmouth Public Library, and Jennifer Gaines, librarian at the Woods Hole Library. 866-999-4626 is our number if you'd like to add a book to our list. 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. Jennifer, what's on your list next?
Well, when Jill was talking about the Essex Serpent that she really wants to leave the program and go read, it reminded me of several other books. One, when you talked about those ghosts, I think, it reminded me of the Lucy Boston children's books, The Children of Greenough and The Stones of Greenough, which I just adore. They're set in England at an old estate, at a manor house with a beautiful garden, and the children of the present day hear laughing around the corner, and they go around the shrubbery, and there are the children of Greenough from several generations before. But they're not scary. They're friendly. And
that's my kind of ghost story.
Yes,
by the way.
Yes. You'd like these. They're great. And I also, when you're reading the same book, the narrator talking about the lichen between her, was it fingers or toes? It reminded me of a newish book from the Museum of Natural History down Cape, which has a wonderful field guide to lichens. Mm. And it's very accessible. I have another book about lichens from Princeton University that's 700 pages long, but I can really get into the one from the museum because it's very simple. And they also, speaking of summertime field guides, one must have, but they need to republish it, is the field guide to dragonflies of Cape Cod. Dragonflies and damselflies.
Yeah.
I like field guides that narrow down the animals to the area that you're in, or plants, mm-hmm. because it narrows your choices a lot when you're searching through the books trying to find it. And they do it magnificently.
Mm. I think I've seen that dragonfly.
It's great. Yeah. Pen and ink and watercolor sketches, mm-hmm. just beautiful. Yeah. And while I'm talking about natural history, I suppose I should bring up Bernd Heinrich, who is very prolific, but he has wonderful little tidbits of information, and I talked about his Winter World book in the winter, but he has one called Summer World, which I think would be my pick up and read a little bit and then put down book, my total summer reading. grumble, grumble. So I would recommend that one also.
Hi. Andrew is giving us a call from Orleans. Hi, Andrew.
Hi. Thanks for letting me put forward a recommendation.
You bet.
I just read The News from the End of the World. It's a book by a local author from Orleans named Emily Jean Miller. And it's a family drama that takes place on Cape Cod, how a family deals with a teenage daughter's pregnancy. And I guess two things really stood out for me. The first was how everyone in the family deals with this event individually and how they interact over it, and including even a seven-year-old sister who doesn't fully know what's going on but can sort of sense it in the family. And then second, it does take place on the Cape. So mm-hmm. it has a very nice depiction of the Cape off-season, including its quiet charm and the close community. So it was a great book that I couldn't put down and read it in about a day or so.
Oh, good. We love books we can't put down. The News from the End of the World by Emily Jean Miller. Thanks, Andrew, for suggesting that. And I should mention, we will have a link to a list of all the books we're talking about today at our website, capeandislands.org. But it'll take us a little while. It won't be there right at 10 o'clock. It'll be a little bit later today, but we will have it up there. Go ahead, Jill.
We will. Well, after all this reading that you're doing, you might also need some sustenance. And so I have brought a summer cookbook for your delight. It's called Homemade Summer by Yvette Van Boven. And it's funny because I believe I brought her winter version of this, just like Jennifer had the summer and winter versions. This is the summer version of her books. And as one person wrote, the cheeriest kickoff to the vacation season. Think of Van Boven as the activities director of your own culinary summer camp. And what I'll say is her cookbooks are just beautifully photographed and beautifully illustrated. And this particular one has a great section on iced tea. So you don't even have to work too hard to do this. She has a red iced tea that includes cranberry juice and strawberries and a red grapefruit. This sounds delicious to me. And there's a refreshing summer tea. There's a mango and cilantro iced tea. I have never put cilantro in my iced tea, but for those of us that love cilantro, it could be great. And a raspberry lemonade. So there are many very simple things that you can do in this. And there's also, as it happens, a recipe for financiers. So I could make my own and not have to go to the French bakery on a regular basis. These wonderful little cookie cakes that are called financiers. There's a recipe in here. But every image is beautiful. It is a beautiful picture book as well as a beautiful cookbook.
I like cookbooks that have pictures. You know, you flip through and go, that looks delicious. I think I'll try it.
And she also tells you how to preserve your own lemons. If you've been looking to learn that, this is the book for you. Right. It's called Homemade Summer by Yvette Van Boven.
Jennifer, what's next?
Other people had told me in my survey of summer reading that they just love to look at cookbooks. Mm-hmm. And we have a display now at the library of cookbooks, and they are, as you said,
very enticing. Yeah, I think, and seasonal too. You know, in the summer, ice cream, or you're looking, like, I think the iced tea section sounds great, because in the summertime, you're looking for something different, some kind of refreshing drink that you aren't having. And then when it comes fall, you've got, your mind is on a different type of menu, right?
Mm-hmm, so, definitely.
Yeah, I think those seasonal cookbooks are great.
Also, in my survey of people asking them about summer reading, I talked to a young fellow who works at a local bookshop, and I asked him exactly to him personally, what did summer reading mean? He said he likes his reading to be lighter and easier to read in the summer, and he thinks there's no better place to read than at the beach. Mm-hmm. And he said, then he went on to say, well, actually, I usually read young adult books in the summer. And he reminded me of one that I had read that's set quasi-locally. It's called We Were Liars by E. Lockhart. And this fellow raved on and on about how amazing it was. And I told him I wouldn't give the ending away. He said, no, don't give the ending away. So, yes, it's a good one. He also recommended one which does sound just like your classic beach read. It's called Nantucket Summer by Layla Howland, which I guess has some history of Nantucket tucked into it, too, which I would like.
Okay. Let's talk to Irma, who's giving us a call from East Falmouth. Hi, Irma.
Hi, Mindy. How are you?
Good.
I have several books I love to read. One of them is Edgar and Lucy by Victor Lodato, L-O-D-A-T-O. Mm-hmm. And then another favorite was The Rent Collector. And I forgot who wrote it. And then the other one that I finished just recently, I absolutely loved, was Monticello. It's a novel about Thomas Jefferson and his daughter. It was just beautiful.
Great. Okay, so we have Edgar and Lucy, The Rent Collector, and Monticello, right?
Yes.
Now, of those three, what was your favorite?
Oh, my God. maybe Edgar and Lucy.
Edgar and Lucy. Okay, Irma, we got
that. Book club.
Wonderful.
Good
okay.
Discussion.
Thank you for calling in with those suggestions. We appreciate that. We'll look up the authors as well. Irma, thanks for the call. Speaking of book clubs, Jennifer, the Woods Hole Library Book Club is reading an interesting book.
Hardly what we have been referring to as summer reading, but it's a social justice book club, which meets every summer at the library. And they're reading Isabel Wilkerson's Warmth of Other Suns, which I heard about mostly on Mindy's show a few weeks ago.
Yeah, shoot. So it's a great, great book.
Yeah. Heavy, very heavy. And they're meeting and discussing every week for, I think, maybe 4 weeks, 6 weeks. So worthy reading.
Right. Jill?
Well, I did bring a few picture books for the picture book crowd, and they are all fabulous. One is called Duck's Vacation by Gilead Sofer, and this is just the funniest book I think I've ever read, in part because it is every time you turn the page, the duck on the page is essentially talking to you. So it starts with the duck on a beach, sipping a drink, watching the ocean, and who's saying, "How relaxing, just me and the sea, the perfect vacation." And then, after you turn the page, the duck says to you, "Whoa, what just happened? Who turned the page?" And may I just say, it goes on from there. The duck interacting with whatever child or adult is reading this picture book. It is really funny and really entertaining, and be prepared to laugh a lot with ducksification. I've also brought Jabari Jumps by Gaia Cornwall, which is a beautiful book about learning how to jump off a diving board. And for any of you who remember having to first jump into a pool, or I suppose there's a certain amount of fear of the first time you go into the ocean as well. I started out in a pool and I remember how hard it was to jump off the edge. And this starts with a small boy telling his father, "I'm jumping off the diving board today," Jabari told his dad. "Really?" said his dad. And it's all about how he gathers his strength in order to jump off this diving board. But what's fabulous about this is the illustrations, and the artist who lives in Providence has taken all of her, she must do word collages or paper collages in her other life. And so a lot of the buildings are made out of books. Which is to say, she's used, it's hard to describe this, but she's used paper, cut up paper books in order to create the, for example, the buildings that are around the swimming pool where this young boy is jumping. In any case, beautiful book, and all about trying to face your fear and jump off the diving board. And the third one I brought is called The Storm, which is a beautiful, all the illustrations are sort of black. Most of them are sort of black and white. Suddenly, when the storm passes, everything turns into color, sort of like the Wizard of Oz. But it all starts with this little boy who wants to go to the beach. They've been planning to go to the beach. And then the storm hits. And of course, the storm is bad and he sleeps through it. But he has all these dreams about being on a ship and how scary everything is. But happily, by the end, the sun has come out and they get to go to the beach. So that is called The Storm by Aki Miyakoshi.
Have either of you read Lauren Wolk's new book?
Not yet, but I
Beyond
hear it's
the
great.
Bright Sea. It is great. And of course, her book before that, Wolf Hollow, was also great. And I was like, how did she write these two great books so close together? But I guess she wrote Beyond the Bright Sea before Wolf Hollow. And Beyond the Bright Sea, it's about an orphan having some questions about, you know, identity and kind of the things you, as an orphan, you might question. But it's locally based. There's a lot of Penikese history in there. And did this orphan come from the leper colony? And yeah, so it's worth picking up. Beyond the Bright Sea, Lauren Wolk.
I think you better have Jill talk because she still has a huge stack of books there.
Well, we only have a couple of minutes left. You got one more?
Oh, well, only because I liked it so much. If you haven't yet read The Boys in the Boat, you must read The Boys in the Boat. It's about the nine Americans and their epic quest for gold at the 1936 Berlin Olympics. Not exactly timely, you might say, but one of the best books I've read in a long time.
Okay.
Very worthy. But you could fall asleep. You could take just little pieces and then go to sleep on the beach.
All right. Jill?
And I've brought a novel called The Shark Club by Anne Kidd Taylor, which is about a researcher who does a lot of research with sharks and was bit by one when she was 12 years old, survived, but now is an adult and has become a marine biologist. So for anybody that might be interested in a novel that includes marine biology, I think there may be a few of you out there. And she talks about what she says, when people ask me why I love sharks, I tell them it's because I was bitten by one when I was 12. Statistically speaking, the coconut palms around the hotel had posed more of a danger to me than the sharks cruising the Gulf. Mm. And she becomes a marine biologist, and of course it's also about her returning to her home and the things that happen with her childhood boyfriend.
And Mary wrote in with a great suggestion, The Nature of the Cape by Beth Schwarzman. Beth was a naturalist and geologist with the U.S. Geological Survey here in Woods Hole. And she says, in one handy book, she gives an overview of the history, geology, and various natural environments of the Cape. There are beautiful drawings of the plants and animals, as well as maps and narrative for 50 explorations for walkers, paddlers, and nature lovers. Fun to read, a great gift for visitors and newcomers. And it really, that's a great book. And we miss Beth. She was
wonderful person. And yeah, that's a really great book. Thanks, Mary, for suggesting that. And again, we're going to have a link to all of the books that we talked about a little bit later on today at our website, capeandislands.org. Jill Erickson, reference librarian at Falmouth Public Library, and Jennifer Gaines, librarian at the Woods Hole Library. Thanks as always.
Thank
Appreciate
you.
Appreciate it. We got a lot of reading to catch up on. I'm Mindy Todd. Thanks for listening.
The Point is produced by Amy Vince. The executive producer is Mindy Todd. Production assistance from Jenny Junker and Dan Tridle. Theme music by Benjamin Verdery and William Coulter.